Welcome to Politics Up Close on KCBW. I'm Jeff Robinson. This year's election for U.S. Senate could be a rematch. After challenging him in 2000, former Utah Senate Minority Leader Scott Howell is once again mounting a campaign against incumbent Orrin Hatch, who's seeking a seventh term in office. Howell served 10 years in the Utah legislature and has been an executive for 34 years with IBM, where he says he's helped produce economic growth. But after taking just 31% of the vote in the last election, how would he be successful this time? We'll talk with Howell about his qualifications and strategy. Then the latest push for openness in Utah government comes from the University of Utah. That's where honor students have spent months coming up with best practices for local governments to adopt. We'll talk with the minds behind the Utah Transparency Project. Politics Up Close is coming up right after the news on KCBW. Welcome to Politics Up Close on KCBW. I'm Jeff Robinson. Scott Howell is no stranger to Utah politics or running for federal office. The former minority leader of the Utah Senate spent 10 years in the state legislature before launching a challenge against longtime Senator Orrin Hatch, who 12 years later Howell is looking to take on again. In addition to serving in legislative leadership, the candidate brings more than three decades of experience as an executive at IBM to the race. He joins me now in the studio to talk about why he's running again, his experience, and how he plans to win. And Scott, it's great to have you on the show.
Jeff, thank you very much. I'm a big fan. I hear you every morning, and I thought you got up at 3 a.m. and didn't go to bed till 1, so it's nice to be here.
Well, it's nice to have you, Scott. We appreciate it. Well, Scott, to start off, why did you feel that now was the right time to challenge Senator Hatch again?
Well, you know, it's interesting, Jeff. I had run against Hatch, as you said, in 2000, and what I was really thinking for this last 12 years is that the guy would retire. I'd always had it in the back of my mind that I wanted to rematch with him. I felt like we had some things that we needed to accomplish and that it was really important. And, you know, when that clarion call of service comes, you listen and then you take the steps and the action necessary to follow that. And my wife and I have always been about public service. The timing hit just perfect. After 34 years at IBM and 2.7 million miles on Delta, I felt it was time to leave, and this just seemed to be the perfect opportunity to dedicate full time to run against our sitting senator.
So didn't you pick a particularly challenging year, though, to get into this race, especially with Mitt Romney expected to be at the top of the GOP presidential ticket there?
You know, I love the saying of a dear friend of mine. He said it's always better to lean into the stiff wind of opportunity than hunker down and do nothing. And Gordon B. Hinckley said that. And this is certainly a stiff wind. And one thing I've learned about the citizens of the great state of Utah, when I was in the state Senate, I had served for three terms. And in my first term, I was gerrymandered out of my seat. Jeff, it was a word I learned in seventh grade, never thought I would live it. And when they gerrymandered me out, they put me in a more Republican area. I'd already won out in Salt Lake County in a very Republican area, beat a guy who'd been in for a long time. And I thought the world had collapsed on me. And that year, it seemed like it was the doomsday. And I actually ran against this guy who'd been in 22 years. He was a sitting LDS bishop, and we won by 61%. So that gave me hope that citizens of the state of Utah are not sheep. They're independent voters, and if they choose to vote for Mitt, they'll have an opportunity to vote for me. And I've had the opportunity. I know Mitt really well. I sat on the Olympic Committee, on the Legislative Oversight Committee, so I know him really well. And the good thing about me that I think I offer the citizens of the state of Utah, I can offer a hand of collaboration to both President Romney or President Obama, whoever it will be. And I'm more about a collaborator than I am about party and making statements and principles.
Was part of the reason you decided to get in because Senator Hatch is so vulnerable right now from the right? I mean, you know, we don't know what the turnout will be at the Republican convention or how that will go, but was that a factor, you know, a window of opportunity here?
When I look at what's going on, there are enough Republicans to fill the basketball team running against Orrin Hatch. And actually, there are substitutes on that team. And he's gone so far to the right. And he is catering. And I think he's kowtowing to that side of it. John Huntsman said he was pandering in an article recently in the Salt Lake Tribune. And I think that's what it is, and I think the senator, it's time for him to retire. Everybody has to retire, and it's too bad that he'd want to run again, and I think it's a great opportunity to put a Democrat a centrist Democrat back into office.
This is Politics Up Close on KCBW. My guest is Scott Howell, a candidate for U.S. Senate who spent several years in the Utah legislature and was Senate Minority Leader. Well, Scott, before we talk about your legislative career, tell me about your time in the private sector. You mentioned recently retired from IBM. What did you do there?
Well, it's a fabulous corporation. It is one of the leading corporations in the world, and I actually started here in Salt Lake City. They hired me as an intern when I was going to the University of Utah. I'd graduated from Skyline High School, got a football scholarship down to Dixie, and then I went on a two-year church service mission. Mm-hmm. Came home and went to the U, and they hired me in my junior year. And it was kind of interesting because I was a political science major, and I was trying to put this all together, why this high-tech company had hired me. My first assignment, I've always been in sales. I've transferred and lived all over the country. While I was in Georgia, I had the opportunity to travel to Italy a lot and cover assignment there. I ran the state of California. It was a billion-dollar portfolio, and I led our sales team down there. IBM has broken up to seven different industries. We have public sector. We have manufacturing. All the industries are covered. And so my experience and my background went to public sector, and we managed the K through higher ed and state and local government, and that's what I've done. These last two or three years, I had a responsibility in the public sector across the U.S., and IBM at that point said, you can live wherever you want. We came back to Utah because we've been living in California. We've been here for about 3 or 4 years. I mean, it's home. I was born and raised here and product of our education system. Now, one of the things fascinating about IBM is they invested hundreds of thousands of dollars in my education. They sent me to Harvard to do a professional education deal. Mm-hmm. Also went to Wharton School of Business, where Huntsman is very famous back there. Mm-hmm. And then to Boston College. So this company has really given me the skills to go back to Washington to learn how to budget properly, to be able to work collaboratively, and really have innovation as a thought process as we look at the challenges of what's facing Washington.
So let's get into your career in the Utah legislature. First elected in 1990, I understand. Tell me about what that experience was like, being first elected to the legislature, as you mentioned, in a seat that was held at the time by a Republican.
Yeah. Well, Jeff, it was brutal. And let me tell you the reason why. I had gotten into politics because we had been transferred here from Georgia. And while we were in Georgia, our son was in kindergarten, and he had full-day kindergarten, a math specialist, a reading specialist, and a PE specialist. And when I came here, I took my son over and enrolled him in school, and there were like 40 kids in this classroom. And I said to the teacher, are you combining classes today? And she said, no. And I said, well, why are there so many kids? She said, well, I get an aide. And this process of seeing what was going on really got to me because I'd learned early that we were in a global economy and we needed to give our children every competitive edge that we could. So I started to complain about this to my neighbors. Oh, and the other thing that threw me off was the teacher said, well, what time will you be back to pick up your son? And I said, do you end school at 3? And she said, no, it's 11:40. And I said, well, it's 9. Is this your short day? And she said, gosh, you got a lot to learn about Utah. We have half-day kindergarten. And so that really got me. So I started complaining to my neighbors, and I said, we are getting the short end of what's happening for our kids to be in a competitive society. So I went down and filed to run for the school board. And while I was down there, Violet said to me, why are you running? I said, I want to change education. And she said, well, if you want to change education, you need to do that at the legislature. So I said, okay, great. And I signed up. And I went home, or I called my wife, and I said, guess what I just did? And she said, what? And I said, I signed up to run for the state Senate. I said, oh, really? And she said, which party did you sign up for? And I said, of course, Democrat. My grandfather was appointed official by John F. Kennedy. And there was a long pause, and she said, well, did you know I was kind of Republican? I said, well, does that mean I don't get your vote? She said, we'll need to talk about this when you get home. So anyway, I filed. I got a call from the Democratic Party, bless their hearts. They said, we don't know who you are. We don't know what you're doing. We have no money and good luck. I said, well, I really appreciate getting to know you. And at that point in time, two people came to really help me, Frank Pignanelli and Darcy Dixon Pignanelli. Darcy Dixon came out and started to help me. And Jeff, I have to tell you, we went out and we met with these people. No one gave me any hope, and we won about 60% against a sitting incumbent. And so The first year I went up there, I introduced a lot of legislation. One, it was to make kindergarten part of our compulsory education system. It didn't pass. I passed some key bills. My first one was for the funeral industry. They helped them on some initiatives. But the biggest blow to me was when they did redistricting, they redistricted me out of my seat. I thought the world had collapsed on me. And so I went back, and Senator Rex Black came and said, "Scott, get your butt in gear. Get out there. You can win this." And I said, "I don't think I can." He said, "Scott, quit feeling sorry for yourself. The citizens of the state of Utah deserve a voice." And so we did, and we ran, and we won. And then I was elected minority leader, and I served for two terms as minority leader. We were four away, Jeff, if you can believe this. Democrats have a hard time. We were four away from the majority. Hmm. Now, I could have stayed on because my approval rating was way high, but I said I'd serve three terms, and that's what I did. I served three terms, got in, and got out. And during my career, I passed key legislation on water, on the environment. We passed a bill to have in-stream flow, which means that you could never dewater a stream again. And that means that it kept the fauna and flora on the sides of the stream safe, and there wouldn't be a fire hazard. We put technology in education. It was the first time that we'd really introduced PCs into the classroom. Worked on a key piece of legislation called digitalized signature, which made – I mean, this sounds so foreign now, saying it back, you know, from 1998, that you wouldn't think that this would be possible. But we were able to do key pieces of legislation on sending documents across the Internet. And just a plethora of bills that I passed, and it was a real, very well-rounded portfolio that I achieved.
This is Politics Up Close on KCBW. My guest is Scott Howell, former minority leader of the Utah Senate and currently a Democratic candidate for the U.S. Senate, challenging Senator Orrin Hatch or whoever happens to be the GOP nominee this year. What do you consider to be the most challenging achievements in terms of actually passing bills there in the legislature, Scott? And where did you find success in getting Republicans to sign on to a bill? You know, the difference between the Democrats and the Republicans in the Senate now is a lot more than four. But still, how did you make those accomplishments there?
I think three things were a part of the success. First of all, you have to know that both Democrats and Republicans are real-life people. And most of them up there have a good heart. Many of my close Republican friends, President Lane Beatty, Arnold Christensen, who's passed away. At the end of the day, we really did try and work together. Now, you have your ideologues on both sides. You have your far left and your far right. But I'd say the majority of people up there want to do the right things for the right reasons. And where I found some of the best success are two areas. One was Senator Mike Wadups. We had reached out and tried to do in the taxation of food, and we jointly sponsored that bill together. And that was an example of where two people that are trying to do the right things for their constituents. That's not a Democrat or a Republican issue. That's taking the most penurious and those who can't afford just basic necessities of food and doing away with that tax. So that was what I found to success was collaboration, working together, and you have to be able to give and take. It has to be that way. It can't be just my way or the highway, and that's what's broken with Washington right now. That's what you see back there. And I blame both sides of the aisle on this one. They go, it's either my way or it's your way. And one of the things that I found very important to me is when I was the leader, I would take caucus stands. And this is really important. And this is what I'd say to my caucus. You vote your conscience, you vote your constituents, and you vote the Constitution. If that happens to be on the way that we prevail, great. If it doesn't, great. So my caucus positions were always about doing the right things and letting those senators exercise why they had been elected and exercising their values of whom they represented. And that's what I think is real key in this. We never had closed-door meetings. One of the things that I'm most proud of is I think I was the original author of Transparency in Government. One of your competing stations, I don't know if they are or not, but they approached me and they said, we'd like to do a live broadcast. I went to the Senate leadership, and they said, oh, no, we don't allow live broadcasts in here. You can't do this. So we ran cords all over that building, had a live broadcast out of my office, and it started the beginning of transparency and live coverage of the Utah State Senate.
Why do you think the number of Democrats in the legislature has dwindled so much in the time since you left the legislature? Why do you think the Democratic Party hasn't done a good job on getting its members reelected, or what has it been exactly? Why has that gap grown so much?
Well, for me, that's a hard one to answer because I was out of the state for so long, and I don't have a real pulse on it. But I will tell you, when I was the leader, I recruited everybody. I went after every seat, and I spent an inordinate amount of time going after and really seeking people who could win. And to be the leader, it's an awful lot of work. I mean, you have to start early by cultivating that talent to come in there and, first of all, convincing them that they should run. Second of all is making sure that they have the capability to serve. And I think for me, it's all about leadership. It's a very, very hard process. And in this state, you know, it's very difficult. I see right now that we haven't fulfilled some seats, and we've given some Republicans a blank check to go in and get reelected. But for me, it was always about finding the talent, cultivating the talent, and bringing in the centrist point of view for the citizens.
This is Politics Up Close on KCBW. My guest in the studio is U.S. Senate candidate Scott Howell, former Senate Minority Leader here in Utah. We're going to take a short break and be right back with more Politics Up Close. You're listening to Politics Up Close here on NPR Utah KCBW. I'm speaking this hour with Scott Howell, a candidate for U.S. Senate. Scott, after your time in the legislature we were just talking about before the break, you won 31% of the vote, I believe, when you challenged Senator Hatch back in 2000. What did you take away from that race that perhaps could make you a superior candidate this time around?
That statistic is really interesting. And when you look at Salt Lake County, we actually took 71% when you broke them down by counties. Mm-hmm. And so that was a big step for us. And I think the thing that I took away the most from that is that Orrin Hatch told me that he wouldn't run again if I wouldn't run against him that time. And 12 years later, he's running again. The other thing that I think that I would take away from that is the notion of how we, the state of Utah, has changed. We've progressed so much. The demographics of the state have changed dramatically from 2000. And I think it's a different campaign because I think there are more independents now that they're willing to reach out there and, quote, as my opponent said in a debate the other night, he said, you know, Republican light. And I kind of wear that connotation with a badge of honor because we're living in Utah, okay? We're not living in Massachusetts. We got to understand this. We're a red state, but we are red, but there's a lot of purple out there. And I think what we've discovered is that the moderate Republican knows that 36 years is too long. They absolutely know that. And I think one of the things that they're looking for is someone who's collaborative, who's willing to work together with the other side of the aisle. And I've got a record that shows that. I think it's more dramatic than ever with Senator Hatch going so far to the right and catering to just a very narrow group of constituents out there. And I think the Tea Party has actually lost some of its luster. And he might make that too through convention, but he's going to have to get out the etchy sketch in order to make things happen.
What do you think of the argument Hatch keeps giving about it's all about the experience, the seniority? You know, he would be chairman of the Senate Finance Committee if Republicans regain control of the Senate, which is an open question. We'll see. But how do you respond to that argument?
Well, you just summarized it right there. We'll see, because we don't know. I mean, there's a lot of hypothetical things that have to happen. But this whole notion of seniority perpetuates this whole thing about power. And that's the very thing that I think people in the state of Utah resent. And if he is the chairman of the Finance Committee, why would it be right for him to give us more than some other state? I mean, this is the whole problem, why it's broken back there. And this is a guy who's voted 17 times to raise the debt ceiling. He voted for the Bush tax cuts, not putting any provision in on how to pay for them. He's voted for two wars with no fiscal responsibility of how to pay for them. Now, in my mind, would you want someone leading the Finance Committee who has such an irresponsible record of their fiduciary responsibilities? It's almost like the proverbial the fox guarding the hen house. Hmm. This seems to me what is the exact problem. And seniority, if we would have had the same senior leadership at IBM when I started, we would be bankrupt. It takes new talent. It takes new thought leadership. And he's been away from the private sector for so long. Each and every day, we've had to transform ourselves. You transform yourself here at KCPW to be effective and just to even stay on the air. If you would have been doing the things you would have done 5 or 10 years ago when you all started, you'd be out of business. And it's this transformation that he doesn't get. And that's why I believe it's time for change. Now, on seniority, my record is clear. I've got a lot of admiration for Scott Brown. He's a Republican out of Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. And I think he went in there with this whole notion, seniority, seniority. It does not count. What counts is listening to the people. And for Utahns to even have a thought that this is the way we want to continue this system of broken, failed, the good old boys club. I mean, it is part of the go-along, the government's bigger than what it should be. Look at our fiscal challenge. When Orrin Hatch went into office, our deficit was almost $1 trillion, $789 billion. It is $14, $15 trillion today. That's irresponsibility.
At the Democratic State Convention this Saturday, Scott, you're running against Pete Ashdown with the Internet Service Provider X Mission for the party's nomination. Now, he also challenged Senator Hatch previously in 2006. You recently had the opportunity to debate your opponent. What do you think of him, and what case would you make to the delegates as to why you, you know, not only would be a better candidate, but could more likely actually win this race?
First of all, every citizen in the state of Utah to look at the Democratic slate, from General Cook to the congressional people, I have never seen such a more talented centrist group of individuals. Pete Ashdown is one of those individuals that's running a great company. And isn't it terrific to have Democrats who are business people who understand the economy? The difference between my opponent and myself is experience. It's about, what experience have I had in leadership? What have I done in the political process? What have I done in the legislative process? Jeff, it is a real understanding to know how to work with the other side of the aisle. I bring real experience to this. When you look at the qualifications, I've been on the front line. I've won in three of the most Republican parts of Salt Lake County. Three times. I mean, that doesn't even sound, that sounds like it's visionary, right? But it's reality. And I think the big difference is I have the time. I retired from IBM. My family's all grown. I'm the father of four boys and now four new daughter-in-laws who keep our house hopping. And it's about the time, it's about the energy, and it's about the experience. And I think at the end of the day, we have to make a decision. Our delegates have to make a decision. Do we want to win and go out and appeal to Democrats, independents, and the moderate Republicans to take back a seat? Or if we elect someone else, either one of my two opponents, it's a statement that they want to make. And ultimately what will happen is we'll elect another radical right Republican that will fight our president on every step of the way of his agenda.
Would you say then that you are more moderate in your politics than your chief Democratic opponent?
You know, when I look back on my record and I looked at it, it was really Utah values that I voted. I mean, at the end of the day, it wasn't far left, it wasn't far right. Now, I did have to take really tough stands when the far right got out of control up at the legislature, and I battled those Republicans. I took them on when I believed that they were wrong, and I was happy to do it. And many times we won. So I think what I do is I represent Utah values. I think I am the person that both the left and the right can trust. And I believe that at the end of the day, that I will represent you. And that's pretty much it of where you look at my record and where I am on centrist. And I've been labeled as a conservative Democrat. I've been other instances. They put labels all over. Look, I am Scott Howell, and I'll vote my conscience, my constituents, and the Constitution. And I believe that comes down on the side of what every Utahn value is there today.
This is Politics Up Close on KCBW. I'm Jeff Robinson, speaking with U.S. Senate candidate Scott Howell, former Utah Senate Minority Leader. Scott, your opponent, Pete Ashdown, has made the issue of campaign financing one of his number one platforms, refusing to accept money, for example, from political action committees. What do you think of that stance?
Well, I think in an ideal world, and if we were living in Massachusetts, that would be great. And let me clarify. The worst decision to come out of the Supreme Court in modern times has been Citizens United. That is a frightening, and Pete and I both agree on that. That is frightening. It needs to be repealed. We don't know who's funding Orrin Hatch's campaign right now in that super. It could be the North Koreans. It could be the Iranians. We don't know. We don't know. I mean, that's the problem with that. I think it's naive to think in Utah that if we don't accept PAC money, that we can't be competitive. There's just not enough dollars to go around. But when we do, and I made it my stance when I was in the state Senate, and this is what I said about PACs when they wanted to contribute to me. Mm-hmm. I said, go ahead and contribute to me, and I'll listen to you. But at the end of the day, I'm going to vote my constituents and what they want. Let me give you one great example. I introduced legislation to ban smoking in Utah. Now, you haven't been here long enough to really think that that would ever be possible. There was smoking in Utah, okay? In restaurants. And so I was very clear. And I'm doing it from a perspective of healthcare because there's so many challenges that smoking leads to. And the tobacco industry gave me $5,000. And I made it very clear to them. I said, look, you need to know that I am taking this issue on. And they kind of smiled at me and said, okay, yeah, sure. Well, I was the first one that helped sponsor their legislation, helped get the legislation to ban smoking in restaurants. And I remember they came back to me and they said, wow, you really do mean what you say. And I said, I absolutely do mean what I say. So their money helped move a Utah value that I think helped save thousands of lives. And it also made our air cleaner. And who in the heck wants to go to a restaurant when there's smoke all over? Your food never tastes good. So for me, it's naive to think that if a PAC tries to control you and control your vote, I think that's absolutely wrong. But if you have a moral compass and you believe what you are representing are the citizens of the state of Utah, we cannot afford not to use every resource to win a seat in the United States Senate and send a Democrat back there.
If this goes to a primary election, Scott, between you and Pete Ashdown, what do you think would happen from there? Do you think that that would significantly hurt the party's resources in the general election? Are you hoping at convention to avoid a primary at all costs?
Two good questions. I think the first one is that sometimes it can be healthy to go into a primary. Other times, and you said this, articulated this very well, you want to save your precious resource. I think for me personally, I need to get out of convention with 60 or 70%. We need to make a strong showing so we can start to raise the money that we need to compete against Orrin Hatch. Let's be real. I think he's spent like $2.5 million, almost $3 million. He's got another $2 or $3 million in there. Mm-hmm. And to be competitive, you have to raise money. So the time that we'd have between April and June between the election, that could be a precious time to raise money, build the campaign, build it so we can win. And that's what I want. And I'm asking right now for every delegate's vote. I am saying this is an issue where you have to decide, do we want to win or do we want to send a message? And if we want to win, let's go and vote and get this thing on its way. I will tell you the next day after convention on that following Monday, I will be feet on the street, ready to go, driving the resources that we need in order to lead us to a victory on November 6th.
And Scott, let's talk a little bit about what you would actually hope to accomplish there in Washington, D.C. We started off this interview talking about education issues. What on that front would you be looking to do and in other areas as well?
No Child Left Behind has been a burden to our education community. I'm the DNA of a father who was a principal for 36 years and a mother who was a kindergarten teacher for 34 years. I know the challenges that both administration and the frontline educators have. No Child Left Behind, while it started out as a good intent, it has to change dramatically. We have to be able to have a society of kids a group of children that are ready to compete in a technology globalized planet. One of the things that I'm very big on is STEM. That's the science, technologies, engineering, and math. Mm-hmm. We've got to incorporate those. And Jeff, this doesn't start in kindergarten. This is pre-kindergarten, where kids are learning so well. I look at my grandkids, and they take that iPhone, and they are amazing what they do with that. They are ready to learn. So I think what Arne Duncan has done on his initiatives on Race to the Top, we need to have more of those initiatives, and they're largely driven by the local school boards. I think the federal government has a role in education, and we ought to have some oversight, but it shouldn't be a draconian way. We need to change that. One of the things that drives me absolutely, just gets right to me, is our model of education is based on an agrarian calendar. When was the last time you went out and harvest potatoes? Now, you were in Pocatello, so maybe you did that a little bit more. But seriously, when is the last time? We got to look at our calendar. I just got back from India. I went over there on a two-week exchange to meet with education leaders, and we wanted to see how we could collaborate better. Mm-hmm. I taught at a preschool in Pune, and I went there, and these kids, every one of them spoke perfect English. Now, Hindi is their main native tongue. And they're doing math. Now, we have to step up to the plate and understand that we cannot have our leadership in innovation and technology and just even in the arts as well if we don't give our kids the same competitive edge. So I think the funding of education has to be at the premier. The second area that I'm concerned about is the deficit. It is out of control. We have too big a government. We have not implemented the technologies, nor have we implemented the systems to make and streamline government to be more effective and efficient. We are so far behind on that, and it just makes me think every department of the federal government has to have a deep dive and a review to say, are you being the most effective? Are you efficient in what you're doing? And by the way, can you show me the dashboard metrics that would justify your existence? Can you show me what value you bring back to the average citizen of the state of Utah? Mm-hmm. What are you doing to drive competency? What are you doing to drive a more effective organization? And so people have said, well, which would you cut off? I wouldn't cut anybody off, but I'd do a deep dive and a review of every department to ensure that they are not bloated and that we can cut our government down to the size that it needs to be to fit our fiscal budget.
What do you think of the job that President Obama is doing? If you move on to the general election, no doubt Senator Hatch or whoever the opponent would be would try to tie you to the president to say, if we have one more Democrat in the Senate, that's one more Democrat doing President Obama's agenda. What do you think about the job he's doing, and would you embrace his presidency as a candidate or try to shy away or somewhere in between?
Well, let's start with your first question. This argument that there's one more Democrat for President Obama, that's nonsense. There will be one more Democrat with Utah values. That's what it will be. Now, I fully intend, whether it's President Romney or President Obama, that we will work together to solve the national challenges that we have. We have to concentrate on the deficit. That's first and foremost. There is no more money. There is no more money. And I don't care if it's President Obama or President Romney. Mm-hmm. There will be severe budget cuts. People will probably not like me because I will be very tough on that. Now, I'm all about protecting those who need help. Social mm-hmm. Security, to me, seems like it needs to be reformed, but it's off limit in terms of doing away with it or radical changes there. I think Medicare and Medicaid need to have a review. But there are programs that I just don't think I want to I will not expose the vulnerable to worse situations. If President Obama what do I think of President Obama? I think that he probably got in over his head. But the reason that he did, and it would have been the same to John McCain, is because who takes on a country when there are two wars and almost a depression. Now, do I believe that out of the McCain and President Obama, I think we got the right person in there to lead. But I don't think anybody could take on that type of challenge and have everybody happy. It's just almost unfathomable to me. And I think if we get things back on par, the American people are going to have to decide who they want as their next president. The economy seems to be picking up, but there's major challenges. You know, you look at Senator Hatch, he voted for the first TARP. And people criticize him for that, and then they criticize Obama, but it was the Bush administration that right. started all that. And so, really, you know, we are such in a challenging time. I will work with whoever the president is. I will stand up when I believe they're wrong, and I'll stand up and when I believe they're right. But the most important thing is that I want to drive my agenda, which is the Utah agenda, first and foremost. And that goes to with the president of the Senate or the minority leader, whoever it's going to be. That's what I'm going to do, and people will know that very quickly. Because this is about leadership. This is strong, bold leadership that's not afraid to take on their party or their president when they believe that they're doing the wrong things or the right things. That's really important. But I won't be an obstructionist. I think our other senator that's back there today is a prime example of shutting down the judiciary because of a principle. I knew his father really well, and Rex Lee would not have ever supported that. He was a collaborator. So I think that we have a lot to learn, and I think that now's the time for Utah to stand up and lead this country with what we've done here, balanced budgets, good legislation, and good people.
This is Politics Up Close on KCBW. My guest for the next couple minutes is Scott Howell, candidate for U.S. Senate and former minority leader in the Utah Senate. What about defense spending, Scott? Certainly that is a huge part of the budget, and it's important here in Utah with Hill Air Force Base. But at the same time, there are Republicans who favor cutting defense spending, some who say it shouldn't be touched. What are your thoughts exactly?
Leon Panetta, I think, really has done a good job. And again, this goes back to my first premise. Every business in our country, every individual has transformed their lives to meet the economic challenges that we've had. The military needs to go through that cycle. They need to figure out better ways of doing things, better deployment, better pay for the soldiers. And I think what you see now is a realignment and a rethinking of how we use those precious resources to make sure that our borders are safe, to make sure that our country is safe. And utilizing technology, I think, has got to be key. When we look at the drones and what we're doing with that, it's so much more cost efficient, and it's giving us an opportunity to really lead the country. But that goes back to my premise on education. You got to have an educated workforce that can go fly those planes and build them. Hill Air Force brings $9 billion into our great state. I've said from the beginning that we have to have a workforce so talented and so good that when the BRAC Commission looks at this, they will go, hands down, Utah is the place where we want to continue to do the refurbishing of our jets. Utah is the place where our employees, we know that they're highly educated. Between General Cook, I hope soon to be Governor Cook, I don't think you could find a stronger team with the governor who's had military experience and myself to really take this issue on. Say what you want about Orrin's ads and the things he's been saying, how he's kept it going, and Jake and Jim are saying these things. The reality is there's nothing like having a general and a leader of the state of Utah and a new senator, Scott Howell, that will work with both administrations to create the opportunity to keep Hill Air Force Base here. We have to. But we have to be able to play by the rules of the game. And what I've said from the beginning, let's have that workforce so trained, so prepared, so knowledgeable that when those generals look at this, and the BRAC's an independent commission. I mean, this will be a political decision. It will be a lot of that. But you want to have a workforce that's so ready to go that they come out and say, we're bringing them all here. You know, our Dugway Proving Grounds is a perfect place for our military to practice and be prepared in the future. Jeff, we just have to fight for it. But we have to be worthy to keep it and ready to keep it.
And one more question before we go today, Scott. I noticed when you came in on your notebook, you have the sticker of the LDS Democrats. This is a very interesting issue. It kind of was at play in the Salt Lake County Convention last weekend with Ben McAdams of being chosen as the Democratic nominee. What do you think of this push by Jim DeBacchus to get more LDS Democrats? And what do you think of some who feel it's kind of divided the party and sort of tried to cater towards Republicans a little bit more? What are your thoughts on LDS Dems?
Well, I think Jim DeBacchus is a great leader, and he realizes that if we want to win and be a force in the state of Utah, that we have to reach out. If we were living in Rome and the Vatican was in our backyard, you can be assured that we'd be over meeting with the Pope, and we'd say, Pope, what's on your mind? Can we help you here? It's a reality. Let me tell you about the LDS Dem caucus. I spoke to that on a Saturday. Mm-hmm. It was the biggest caucus that there was. Labor was one on one side, and the LDS Dems were on the other. I think it's time for the LDS community to stand up and hold their head high and with great solace to know that they have a voice in this state. One of my good friends, President Hinckley, one time we were in a meeting, and he said to me, Scott, we are not a Republican church. It does us no good to align with one party. We need good men and women in both parties. And I think that exemplifies why it's important for this LDS Dem caucus to continue to grow. I think it's a sanctuary where LDS members can go to, where in the past they haven't been sure about Democrats. Mm-hmm. Some of the moral issues have kind of frightened them. But I think, actually, if you're a true believer in the faith and you go through that, the LDS Dems really do mirror the Democratic Party and what their initiatives are, taking care of the indigent, helping the poor to get back on their feet, and let me emphasize, to get back on their feet, making sure that there's justice and there's fairness. Now, the greatest day of my life was 2 days before I left the legislature. I had a couple come up, and they sat down with me, and they said, we just learned that you're LDS. And I said, really? They said, we've lived here for 10 years, and we're very active, and we just heard you were, and we want to thank you. The very next day, I had a couple come in, and they said, look, we moved here from out of state, and we're not LDS. In fact, they were Catholic. They lived over by St. Thomas More Parish off Danish Road. Mm-hmm. And they said, you know, we voted for you every time, and in the last 10 years, it wasn't until last weekend we found out you were LDS, and we appreciate you. My point is, whether you're black, green, yellow, Jewish, atheist, agnostic, Catholic, Protestant, government is there to represent the people. And that's the bottom line. And I think that this LDS Dem has been an opportunity to at least bring those who have felt left out, disenfranchised, back into a party that's reaching out to them. And you know, what's great about this is labor, LDS Dems, education, they all come together. I mean, at the end of the day, we are a value-based, principled party that's out working for the people. That's the bottom line. That is the bottom line on this whole thing, Jeff.
My guest has been Scott Howell, a Democratic candidate for U.S. Senate. He will face Pete Ashdown in the Democratic convention coming up this weekend. And Scott, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure.
Jeff, it's a pleasure to meet you, and continued success to KCPW. You're an important voice in the community, and I salute you for all that you do. And it's competition's a good thing, and both NPR stations are better, and we are well-served here. So thanks, Jeff, for your good work.
This is Politics Up Close. We'll be right back. You're listening to Politics Up Close on KCPW. I'm Jeff Robinson. While some Utah cities and counties have won accolades for openness in government, there's always room for improvement, and honors students at the University of Utah want to help. My guests this morning have spent several months creating the Utah Transparency Project, a set of best practices they'll be submitting to governments across the state and encouraging them to adopt. Teresa Krause is a second-year computer science major at the U. Teresa, it's good to have you.
Thank you.
And Tiana, too, is a sophomore who's majoring in political science and English. Tiana, it's good to have you on the show as well.
Thank you.
So when did you both get started making the Utah Transparency Project? And is this an initiative that's been student-led or faculty-led, or what exactly?
Well, our class was part of a think tank that's year-long, so we started last semester researching government transparency and individual privacy. Mm-hmm. And then after we researched extensively for a semester, we came up with, in January, this Utah Transparency Project. And it's been student-led, but we have a faculty mentor, Randy Dreyer, who works within the Honors College and is just retired from the law school at the U.
And Teresa, why are you interested in this particular issue in government transparency?
Well, transparency is something that affects every citizen, and especially because we're focusing on local government, and that is something that most closely interacts with citizens. So we really just want to be able to get that information that is pertinent to daily lives out to the public.
So how did you both go about doing your research for this issue?
Well, last semester we had a lot of visitors from national organizations with recovery.gov or data.gov that came mm-hmm. and spoke to us about how they've been able to engage citizens in visiting their website. And that's where the research really started, was visiting with those professionals outside of Utah.
And so you've come up with a list of these five best practices that are kind of at the core of this project. They're available on your website, UtahTransparencyProject.org. Let's talk about these five tenets here and, you know, the specifics of them and why they're good for local government.
Yeah, absolutely. We tended to focus a little bit on technology and a city's website mm-hmm. Because we feel like this recent, you know, technology movement is crucial to helping transparency along. So our best practices are things that, you know, try to get information more accessible on their websites within three clicks. They're something that gets public meeting times online, that gets contact information online, and even live broadcasts of public meetings.
Mm-hmm. And so we've seen that here in Salt Lake City. We've seen that up at the Utah legislature. You can look at those live broadcasts. But in doing your research, did you find that there are lots of other local governments in Utah that fall short of that standard?
Yes, absolutely. Actually, we looking at the Sutherland Institute's mm-hmm. Data mm-hmm. for grading the cities and counties, they gave Utah an average of a D in transparency. Mm-hmm. So there's a great need for improvement in transparency. I mean, some cities don't even have a website.
Mm-hmm. I'm speaking with Teresa Krause and Tiana Tu with the Utah Transparency Project up at the University of Utah. So you launched this partnership, you know, a media campaign as well with Salt Lake City Mayor Ralph Becker. How are you trying to involve, you know, Mayor Becker and other local elected officials in the project?
Well, Salt Lake City is the leader in transparency within Utah. And so it's really important for us to have Ralph Becker speak in trying to, you know, get other counties and city mayors involved in this project because he is a forerunner with his administration. And so that was one of the major reasons why we asked him to be a part of our launch last Wednesday. And since then, a lot of the media has been really helpful in helping us get the word out to other cities and counties and people in general, trying to make sure they urge their city councils to vote on these best practices. So Mayor Becker was definitely helpful in getting the media to listen to our project.
And so when it comes to actually getting these implemented across the state, what's the challenge there? I mean, do you plan to actually travel to, you know, Panguitch and all these rural towns across the state? Or how do you hope to actually see these be put into action?
Well, we're hoping that we got the ball rolling with mm-hmm. our project. And we really want, we have a lot of supporting organizations. We want them to kind of take hold of this initiative and also the citizens to get involved.
Mm-hmm. In what way can they get involved exactly?
Well, writing their government officials, writing letters to the editor, anything like that, encouraging them to sign on.
There's also a place on their website where they can kind of interact with our project and make comments on what we should do to, you know, improve or what and make comments to their cities and towns and say, hey, endorse these students and their best practices because they're really going to help make us more engaged as a citizenry in Utah.
And so, Tiana, you're a political science major. When this is all over, is this something that you hope to continue, this goal?
Definitely. I think so. Government in general needs to be more transparent. Utah has a kind of a political atmosphere where citizens are not, they're kind of apathetic to their government. And I feel like governments really need to just kind of take a hold of this and use these best practices as a way to make their administrations more effective and more efficient. And if I continue in political science, I definitely want to make sure that I continue endorsing transparency and making sure that I act in a transparent manner if I'm acting on behalf of the public.
And Teresa, as a computer science major, was that part of the appeal here too, using technology in government?
Yeah, absolutely. That was part of the reason I chose working with this particular think tank. I think that it's great to include technology in government aspects.
We've been speaking with Teresa Kraus and Tiana Tu. They are both second-year students at the University of Utah, part of the Utah Transparency Project, which you can learn more about at utahtransparencyproject.org. Teresa and Tiana, it's been great to have you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Politics Up Close is a production of KCBW News. Listen to our show every Friday morning at 9 and Sunday morning at 6, and download podcasts of our interviews online at kcbw.org. I'm Jeff Robinson. Thanks for joining us.